I'm Alex Green, and this is Stereo Embers, the podcast. Check this out.
There's a darkness inside of me. Like magnets, we're only drawn to thee. So we keep circling, circling down, crashing and burning it down. Losing to gravity now, giving to following no. 'Cause nobody moves me. Tell me the truth, make it a good lie. Take me away into the made night.
Is the music of my guest today on the program, Laces. Let me tell you a little bit about Laces. What's in a name? William Shakespeare once asked. That which we call a rose, he wrote, by any other name, would smell as sweet. Well, putting that in musical terms, when Prince changed his name, I'm sure this is exactly what Shakespeare had in mind when he wrote that, but when Prince changed his name from Prince, to the artist formerly known as Prince, and then that became an acronym, and then that became a symbol, all those changes didn't make a difference. Prince was Prince was Prince was Prince. So, in spite of all the name changes, every time you heard a Prince song, it was Prince. Now, keeping that model in mind, Laces wasn't always Laces. When I first heard of Laces, she was Charlotte Sometimes. But before she was Charlotte Sometimes, she was Jessica Vaughn. But Jessica Vaughn wasn't going to be known as Jessica Vaughn in the music world. She christened herself Charlotte Sometimes. I thought it was a reference to The Cure, but it turns out that even The Cure song was a reference to something else, and that something else was Penelope Farmer's 1969 novel for young adults called Charlotte Sometimes. So, Charlotte Sometimes' debut album, Waves and the Both of Us, came out in 2008, and suddenly, the New Jersey-born singer-songwriter's life changed drastically. Her record cracked the Billboard Top 200, she was on the Warped Tour, and her life was moving at a rather frantic pace. I'll let her tell you about what all that pace did to her life, but let me just say this. It wasn't good. The Geffen deal went sideways, but Charlotte Sometimes kept moving forward, putting out a series of fabulous indie records. So, what did Charlotte Sometimes sound like? Well, as you can tell from the music playing behind me, I'm one step ahead of you. It sounded like this.
Go get your ribbon box. Go get your wounded heart. Seeing spiders, I'm told they never lie. Go get your brother love. Go get your losing head. Seeing fire, I'm told they never burn. So want it all. I'll pull your back.
There's a good example of the work that Charlotte Sometimes was doing. Oh, and I almost forgot to tell you this. Charlotte Sometimes made an appearance on The Voice. Her appearance was so successful, it caused all four judges to turn around their chairs. Well, why wouldn't they? So, she had a lot of success, but by 2014, she decided to retire the Charlotte Sometimes moniker. The new moniker? Well, you guessed it. Laces. Now, let me say something about Laces' voice. It is quite easily one of the most arresting voices I've ever heard. It's rich, powerful, soul-stirring, and true. In her work, Laces emerges as a singer with authority, vulnerability, nerve, and heart. Quite simply, she knocks me out, and I couldn't wait to talk to her. So, without further ado, this is my conversation with Laces. Enjoy it right here on Stereo Embers, the podcast.
I just I rolled out of bed like 15 minutes ago, so we're just cruising on some coffee now.
Do you get more womanly as the day progresses? Your voice changes.
It gets higher. Like I when I wake up, I sound like I am like a severe cigarette smoker, and then as I wake up, and around 3 o'clock, I finally sound like myself, and like I can sing.
I totally get that. I had this thing where when I do a podcast in the morning, I'm like, oh, I gotta make sure I don't sound like the morning.
Yeah, you gotta wake up. Like my voice teacher would always say, like, if you have a show, you have an interview, like wake up like 3 hours beforehand. But I did not do that.
No, I totally understand that. And I also, you know, I teach at a university in the Bay Area, and I have morning classes, and I'm like, I don't want to sound like I just rolled out of bed, because sometimes I have.
Right. You're like, let me get some warm-ups in. I'll do a little, like...
Yeah, exactly. Do you think about your voice? Do you think about it all the time? Is it something you have to kind of, like, protect?
Yes, I do think about it all the time. It's exhausting. Not as much anymore, because I used to be, like, a pretty heavy... like touring artist, and I was in the studio every day. And so I was extra careful, because my songs that I write, not only for myself, but for other people, and when I'm doing like background singing, is always pretty challenging. And the songs that I write, I don't know why I do this to myself. I guess I'm a masochist. I just like go all over the place. Like I start really low, I can end up all the way up into a high F, like in a belt. And so to do that, like on a daily basis, when I used to have to tour, was like pretty daunting. But now it's not so bad, but I do think about it. I had a vocal injury a few years ago that, I feel like every single like professional, vocalist ends up having at some point, which is like a hemorrhage on your vocal cord. And so now I think about it a little bit more, but I do so many different things in music, where I work in like music licensing, and I do a lot of custom music, and then I'll sing, and then I write for other people. So there's less pressure on me on a daily basis now.
And is it also one of those things where you have to think about like what you eat? Because I talked to somebody and they were saying like nightshades are really bad for a voice, or obviously drinking or smoking cigarettes. Like, do you think in terms of that now as well?
Kind of. I mean, I think that every body is different and can kind of handle different things. Like there's certain singers out there that can just do whatever the fuck they want to do.
Right.
And I admire them so much. Like Pat Monahan and Butch Walker are like these two, like they have these voice boxes of steel, and like nothing ever happens to them. Like Butch Walker can have a whole like bottle of red wine and like sing like an angel. And like, I'm pretty sure Pat Monahan's never had a voice lesson in his life, and he just like he slays. So I think every body is different. Like I think I have a more sensitive constitution. So it took a little bit more kind of figuring out what I need to do. But nightshades don't really bother me. I have other like health issues, but I just try not to, like, if I have a show, I try not to act like an asshole. You know, I'm like, don't smoke cigarettes. I don't do that anyway. But like, maybe smoke less weed. I'm like, all right, I can do that. And I try not to drink like 4 days before a show. Though sometimes I do drink during them. So I'm a bad person to ask.
What about like if somebody around you is sick? Are you like, I got to get away from that person?
Yeah, I don't dig that. Even if I'm not singing, I just am not like into the germs situation. I have like two autoimmune diseases. So if I get sick, it just really runs me down and kind of can throw off my whole game. So I definitely baby myself. I take really good care of myself.
Good. Yeah. I mean, that is your, you know, your instrument, right? So you have to protect it.
Yeah, but yeah, I if my husband starts sniffling, I'm like, you're not sleeping in here.
What, when you talk about the vocal hemorrhage, was that, but I don't mean to get so medical with you, but what,
yeah,
like, what,
let's get into it.
What, when that happened, did you know something was wrong?
Kind of. So, like, you know, I have the, I tend to overreact to things. So I sometimes don't listen to my initial reactions. So I think because I had toured so long and, like, kind of just like any athlete, and when you sing on it, when you sing difficult material and you're singing on it on a daily basis, and athletically, there's always a chance of injury, and it's almost unrealistic to think that you won't injure yourself at some point if you're doing it as long as I've been doing it, which has been over 15 years. So, like, when people, like, you know, you look at Adele and you're like, of course, like, even if she's singing completely technically perfect, like, you're only human. Like, what if you're sick one day or you cough the wrong way, right? And then you hurt yourself. It's the same thing, like, with any athlete. Like, you see people, like, you know, football players and, you know, like, you're going to get injured. It's just how long is it going to keep you down? But so I wasn't, like, I was feeling fatigued, you know, and I was noticing that I was sounding a little bit more, you know, hoarse than normal. And I've kind of, like, I've had some issues in the past, but, like, nothing that I couldn't get around. And all of a sudden I just had, like, was losing control of my voice. And, like, I'm such a control freak. And that's when I was like, crap, I think I did something. And it happened when, after I did, some Vegas shows, and, the music was pretty challenging. And I think just being in the smoky environment in the casino, and I think I might've had already had a vocal injury and I was singing on top of it. And, for women, I know, I don't know why we're getting so technical, but we're just like deep in it. But, for women, if you are, like, close to your period or on your period, the blood vessels in your vocal cords are more susceptible to hemorrhage. So it was kind of like a perfect storm for me. So then I went in and they were like, oh yeah, you did this. And then you kept singing on it, which is when the injury happens. You know what I mean? So, like, you can, like, you know, bursting a blood vessel isn't that, like, crazy. It happens all over your body, you know?
Right.
But what happens is if you do it on your vocal cord and you sing athletically, and you don't give yourself a chance to, like really heal from that, and you sing on it, that's when injury can happen. And, it's pretty common. But you know what? The one thing I would say is that when that does happen, you get, like, really good at, like, knowing when your voice is tired and then being like, oh, I can't sing right now. Or, I'm susceptible to having another injury if I do this. So you just get more careful, but, like, not like psycho. I'm like, I feel like more relaxed now that I had that vocal injury. I'm like, oh, whatever, I'm fine. I survived.
And was that a long recovery, or was it a few months?
So I think it took, like, about a year to, like, feel completely normal.
Wow.
I was back to singing, you know, within, like, a month and a half. And I would say it was more something that I noticed in comparison to what other people noticed. You know, I don't think anyone could hear it. It was just that I was getting really tired. So I had to change around my, like, writing schedule, and, you know, I write for film and TV. So I would have to say, okay, I can only be in the studio for, this amount of time. And then I can't be working tomorrow. So it was kind of like a lesson in self-care and, like, being okay with saying no. So it was a lesson I needed to learn, and, so you don't push yourself. But I was recommended to eventually get surgery on the vocal cord. But we wanted to wait and see if it, like, healed itself, and, like, it actually did. And now I don't need surgery, and it all worked out.
Did it ever? I mean, I noticed, because I was a journalist for a really long time, and I remember I interviewed Bowie, and I listened to the tape of it, and I was so nervous that I was talking really high, and like way too high. And then I noticed that when I'm not nervous, like you know, I'll talk much lower. And so I also wonder, like, how nerves will play into things. Like, sometimes you overdo it because you're a little bit nervous.
Oh, that happens all the time. I would say most of the time, any of my vocal issues I've ever had in my entire life have been because I'm a stressed out maniac and not actually because I'm singing. Like, a few weeks ago, I don't play shows that often anymore. And I was going to play a show, and whenever I'm going to play a show, I become kind of a nervous wreck, and I don't sleep, and I, therefore my husband doesn't sleep and I'm driving him crazy. And, you know, I all of a sudden I'm like, oh, I can't sing. The notes are not coming out. Like, I start like just going into like this really like circular conversation with myself. And, you know, I went to like my voice doctor to get like she does this vocal massage, and she was just like, she's like, there's nothing wrong with your voice. You're just so stressed out. Like, your entire like neck muscles just like won't even move.
Right.
And I was like, so crazy that we do that to ourselves. And I noticed like, if I'm really stressed out, I'll have like a glass of wine, and all of a sudden my voice is completely different because I've relaxed. You know, it's very funny.
Yeah, that it plays a lot into it. I remember I heard Morgan Freeman, someone was asking him about like, why do you have such a great voice? And he was like, well, most people speak, you know, octaves that are way too high for them. And I just speak in my regular natural setting where I should be speaking from.
Yeah, it's so true. I have like a phone voice. Like when I'm like, hi, how are you? Like, oh my God. And then, but then like when I'm talking to my husband, I'm like, blah, 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 blah. I'm like super low. And then, you know, it's like, I change all the time. And so, you know, I've listened back to myself in like different interviews I've done over the years, and I can hear my anxiety levels throughout the years and like where my voice is, because even my speech is, impacted, you know, affected. So it's definitely I think the voice is fascinating. It's like the one instrument that like is harder to control and takes a lot of like, you know, just a lot of just thought and practice and making sure you're centered. And that is something I've always, was challenged with. So I think that's maybe why I'm so fascinated by it.
But the thing about you is that, listen to me, here's the thing about you.
Here's the thing about you.
Yeah, I'm going to tell you. The thing about you is that when I got your first album, I thought, this is somebody who is in full command of their voice. This is somebody who knows exactly how to use it. And I have only felt that way, say, in the last 35 years about Patty Griffin and Amy Winehouse. And
aw, thank you.
Yeah, I mean, like, I heard your record and I thought, this is somebody who completely gets how to throw the pitches. Like, you seemed very much in control of what you were doing very young. Did it feel that way to you? And how did you think that you crafted that kind of command over that instrument?
I feel like the answer to that question is complicated. I would say yes and no. I think that I've always come from the thinking of, don't get in your own way. Mm-hmm. And when I sing, I try not to overthink it. So like, right before I'm singing, right after I'm singing, I am overthinking the entire thing, and I think that I can't sing and I don't know what I'm doing. But when I am performing and when I am singing it, whether that's on the mic in the studio or if that's on stage, I really commit to it, and I try to separate my anxiety and my just that harsh critic. And I shut her off. And so I do think that I can command my voice in that way when I get out of my own way. But I always wasn't a very good instrumentalist my entire life. So voice was my way of expressing myself in like trying to just find new ways to make melodies. And sometimes I think, you know, when you're a musician, and like when it comes to art, like I have a love-hate relationship with it. It's not necessarily something I feel like I I've chosen to do. I feel like it kind of chose me, and you kind of have to be respectful of that. And it's just not up to me. And so I think sometimes I could take credit for all this stuff, but it's not really me. It doesn't really belong to me. It's just kind of comes out.
I get it. Was there ever a moment where you thought, I'm going to walk away from this and go be a lawyer, and it just keeps pulling you back? Is it sort of like that too?
Totally. It's like a shitty boyfriend. I'm trying to quit you.
Right.
Yeah. You know, I've been doing it professionally since I was 16 years old, and you know, I'm 31 now, and I've definitely have fantasized about doing other things. I've tried to do other things. You know, I've like tried to date like a high school teacher and like just like teach music to toddlers. And I've tried to like work in advertising. Like I've tried it all. And, you know, it wasn't that I wasn't good at those things. You know, I was working at this advertising company and I got offered this great job. And I was like, I cried when they offered me the job. I was like, I can't do this. Like, there's no way that I could live this life. And there's nothing wrong with that life. It just would not authentically be me. And I'm just so unpredictable. Like, I need to go and randomly stare at a ceiling and, like, write about my feelings every once in a while. So it was just, I can't get away from it. And I love it so much. I love the art of expression. I love sharing music with others. I love being able to like kind of solve puzzles, especially in like the film and TV space when I'm writing a custom theme or something like that. I love a good homework assignment in music, which is kind of different than I think some of my peers because I'm not as free. I'm a little bit more type A. But I just can't escape it. And so I think the last 2 years or 3 years, I've kind of just been like, I surrender. You got me for life.
Right.
I guess I'm going to stay in music.
Yeah. It's like you win, superpower.
Yeah. Like you win. And you know, my husband always laughs at me because he's like, it's like, why are you always like second guessing it? And like, you know, just making yourself feel bad about the thing that you've always done and you've been in and that you're succeeding at.
What industry is he in? Like, is he in a totally different world?
No, he's in music too. Yeah.
Okay.
So you guys
get it. Like, in other words, like it's a house where everybody gets what's going on.
Oh yeah. It's a very musical house. I've known my husband for 10 years. He used to be my drummer when I was Charlotte sometimes. And, you know, now he's a music manager. And he owns my company with me, my Head Bitch Music Company. And so it's just everything that we do has to do with like supporting musicians or, you know, working on shows or working on songs or trying to help another artist find their voice. And you know, he still drums. And it's like right now he's in the other room having a conference call with an artist. So it's just like it's a whole musical compound in here.
Yeah, there's no escaping it. You kind of actually bunkered down even more.
I know, and that's why like why would I lie to myself and pretend that I'd be doing anything else?
Totally. You did get into this pretty young, and I wonder if there was a kind of vulnerability. I mean, did you feel vulnerable as a young artist? Did you feel and do you still feel that way? Because being an artist, expressing yourself is a vulnerable thing. And then suddenly when you're 16 and there's eyes all over you, that must have been very disorienting.
It was very disorienting. I think that there's all sorts of traumas that you go through in your life. And some of them are like these extreme traumas and some of them are just like these small little traumas that shape who you become. And I think that when your brain is still developing, like those kind of comments and just the way that you experience life will remain a part of you and will shape the way that you view the world. And I think when I started really young and, you know, my family wasn't like a musical family and you know, they weren't stage parents and we didn't come from a lot of money. So they were like, if you want to be a musician, like, you're going to have to figure that out on your own. And I was like, all right, I will get a record deal by the time I'm 18. Thank you so much. I was a little firecracker. But it was challenging because what was happening is that I also had got diagnosed with my jaw disease when I was like 14, and I was getting reconstructive surgery when I was 16 at the same time that I had signed with Crush Management, who manages like Fall Out Boy and Train and Sia and Panic at the Disco. And all of a sudden I was like, my whole face was changing, and I was also using my face to communicate my art. Right.
Right.
So it's hard enough to be a teenager. And I think that kind of just like that extreme pressure, making a record, getting reconstructive surgery and having to learn how to sing again with my face. And then all of a sudden, like, you know, cut maybe like 2 years later, making my record for Geffen, and then going from like living at home and like, to all of a sudden like being on tour, being very like shielded from the world, to then like, you know, the internet was starting to boom, and like just being able to, people have such easy access to me, being able, them sharing their comments about what my face looked like, what my body looked like, what my voice sounded like, was deeply challenging. And I think that as an adult, you're more equipped to handle those kind of things. And as like a young adult, it is harder to hear. And, you know, I didn't have the most supportive management at the time. So I just felt very like lonely and isolated and extremely vulnerable. But I always felt good when I was singing and sharing my songs.
But, you know, it made me think, as you were saying that, that there's something that the industry doesn't understand. And it's not just one thing, obviously, but like I remember, and I think about this a lot, and it comes up a lot in interviews where I look at Amy Winehouse, who I just adored, and I thought she should never have been playing Glastonbury. Too big. You know, and if you watch that movie, you realize that all she ever wanted to do was play small nightclubs. And I feel like it's 0 to 60 with artists where it's like, okay, now we're going to take you and put you on the stage at Lollapalooza or the Warped Tour. Like, I don't think that's even appropriate. There seems like there's no gradation, where there's no place where it's like, let's take this artist and put them on this different kind of circuit. It's always like, let's try to break them big on a huge, massive stage, when I think that's actually probably not the right thing to do. Like with you, I would have thought, let's get her into like small clubs everywhere we can, because the music will translate to me in a more immediate way. Even the stuff you're doing now, like the newest stuff, which I want to talk about, same thing. So I don't know if you feel that way too. Like, you know, I saw you doing the Warped Tour and all that kind of stuff, and I thought, I don't even know if that would have been the right move to make.
So I definitely felt that way. I think that my management and I had very different ideas about what I should be doing to support my record. I definitely was treated like I was the child who didn't know anything. And honestly, that's fine. Like, especially as an adult now, I totally understand where that was coming from. I think that it would have been better to have like a female management. I think at the time, having like two white men tell a young woman how she should dress and how she should behave and what she should be doing with her career is always a hard pill to swallow.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of support and understanding or empathy of what it means to be a woman on the road. A young woman on the road with a bunch of men. I remember them telling me that they wanted me to do the Warped Tour, and I was like, fuck. But I wasn't very excited about it. But that being said, I don't regret it. Kevin at the Warped Tour is such a lovely, amazing human being, and he's been nothing but extremely supportive. And I did learn a lot from being, I would say, it wasn't great necessarily, like, great for my career, because it wasn't the audience necessarily that would really, really participate with what I was, what my heart songs were, you know. But I do think it made me a better performer. Mm. And I think it made me really adaptable to situations that make me deeply uncomfortable, because that whole summer was just like basically one, just a summer of learning how to be uncomfortable. And so I think that's always a good lesson to learn as a human being. And has made me very adaptable when it comes to writing music and being on stage or learning how to deal with a crowd that doesn't really want to listen to you. I learned all those lessons on the Warped Tour, and I even came back on the Warped Tour because it was such a good experience. But I don't think that musically it made sense. I think that if I were managing me then, or if, I think if my husband was managing me then, we probably would have gone a different way. I was more a hot AC artist. So, like when I toured with Gavin DeGraw, like that made sense, you know, right. I toured with Pat Monahan, like that made sense. Even when I toured with Butch Walker, like that made sense. It didn't really make sense for me to be with like kind of this pop punk, groupings, because my music wasn't really that. And while I kind of have a, like a spunky spirit, that's just not the music that I was making. And so I ended up kind of like with my fans are like all these misfits, you know, and a lot of them are, you know, they found me on the Warped Tour, but it is interesting to see how all of that played out and the way, you know, how music managers make decisions for their artists. And it's not always in the artist's best interest. Sometimes it's, you know, fulfilling a bigger agenda that they have. So.
Right. Like Ella Fitzgerald was never going to play Coachella. I mean,
Right.
Like that, there was a system in place where they knew where to put artists like that. And it seems like something got lost. And I like what you said about making musical sense. It's like, I totally agree with that. I mean, I even think like Adele doing, you know, 100,000 people. I just think that's silly. I don't think, because there's nothing about the music that is spectacle or, you know, it seems much more intimate. So yeah, I agree with you.
I've always loved a more intimate show. Personally, like, we just played a really small intimate show on June 4th. And, you know, the last show I did was all the way back in October, but you know, it was like I think it was like a 250, 300 person room. And, you know, we filled it and it was great. And so, but I was like, it's just a different, it, even that, like, I was like, that's great. But like, I really want to connect, you know? So the next show that I did, it was like a 60 person room.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And like, I couldn't really promote it too much because I didn't like, you can't go from like a 300 people show and then do like a 60 person show. but I was like, I want it to be free. And I just want to be able to like relax and like be able to sing my songs, because to me, you know, I'm not touring anymore. Like that's just not really what I'm about right now. And I'm not trying to be like this famous artist anymore. Like that's just, it's not like I'm always going to be an artist, but that time in my life seems, I think that chapter might be closed, you know, and that's okay. So now I need to go back to basics where if I'm going to share my music, it's got to be done in a way that it's fulfilling to me, or else I might as well just keep playing the songs in my room.
Get heady, I get high, so turn left till I get right, baby. I burn, but do I shine? 'Cause I'm crossing all the lines till it's heavy. I color outside the lines, tell everyone I'm doing fine. 'Cause some days not. Like seasons, it takes time off my chest and on my mind. 'Cause some days, not tonight. Caught in the middle.
really, so it's alright. Can't change, but I can pay it. No one is getting saved, but we try it. So hopes they multiply and never leave you satisfied. Someday I'll roll the dice. I dream, but it takes time off my chest and on my mind. Some days not tonight.
Kind of relieved that phase is over and you're starting from a totally different place where you're more in control. Is it kind of a relief?
It's such a relief. I feel like I'm in the best like stage of my life. I feel just really good and stable, and I've been able to curate a life that makes sense for me. And my own mental health. And I think that I feel really lucky that I get to do music in all different ways now. And it's not just one way. I think that it's silly to think that people aren't extremely layered, and especially artists. And it's just hard for me to fulfill doing just one thing. Like if I was just the artist and I'm just like writing an album and touring, that's just not fulfilling for me. It's not enough. So I love writing songs for other people. I love singing on television. I love writing songs like on briefs. I like working on the shows that I get to work on. And I like working on a bunch of different artist projects. And I don't think I would be able to do that if I was still like signed to Interscope Records making that another album, you know? I'd be like a brand influencer, like with my own brand.
Right.
Like,
right.
And I don't know if I want all of that. Like, listen, I love attention. I'm still an attention whore, but I don't know if I want all of that criticism either. I'm like safe from that now. You know what I mean? There's like maybe like a few trolls still out there, but like they're drowned out by the people that love and support me. So it's just like when you go on that scale, the amount of like disgustingness that comes out from other human beings is just so extreme. And I feel like life is too short / too long to deal with that shit.
Agreed. Well said. and by the way, you know, your story is, it's so great, but there are some people who really were sort of hamstrung and taken down by those people to the point where it really kind of maimed them emotionally.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely takes time. You know, I think my biggest eye opener thing with being a young woman in music was that there's two different things that happened while I was on tour. One, I had before Ryan, I had a different before my husband, I had a different drummer on my first few tours, and he one time, like, he did not treat me like I was the one who was, like, paying his checks, you know? Yes. Like, we weren't, like, a band. Like, they were my session players, you know? I had them on retainer, and they're sweet guys, and they were my family, most of them. But this guy called me, I remember he called me a cunt, because I asked to go to the bathroom, because I wanted to stop the band. And I just remember that sticking with me so much that, like, he felt like he could talk to me that way, even though it was my band, you know, it was my project, and I was the one that was signed, and I'm the one that was funding everything. And then I remember also something happening. You know, we were doing like 20, I did 26 shows in a row, and I was doing promo in the mornings, and sometimes I would fly out to a different state and do promo and then come back to where we were having the show. And then I would do like a meet and greet or an acoustic set. I would play my show, and then I would meet with the fans and sell merch and stuff like that. And that was always like really encouraged. And I will say, I mean, I'll get back to that, but I love my fans, but I think I'm a very, I'm more of an isolated person sometimes. I feel weird with strangers. Like, I'm very friendly, but I just, like, it's hard to meet so many strangers all at once and they all want to hug you. It gives me anxiety.
Sure.
So it's not them. It's just kind of like it all happens at you. You get like this really rush and high on stage, and then all of a sudden, like, people are talking to you, and you don't, like, there's no good way. If somebody's telling you that you've changed their life, there's no good, like, reaction to that, right? Like, it's always going to be disappointing to them. And I feel like that, like, always stuck with me. I was like, I always wanted to make them feel really heard and seen. And it's hard to do that all the time, you know? And anyway, I was doing so many shows in a row, and, you know, my voice was getting fatigued, and I hadn't been sleeping because I was sharing a room with, like, three of my bandmates. And I didn't have any privacy. And I remember calling my manager, and I was crying, and I was like, I just need just one day off. I just need one day off to sleep. Because what happens when your brain doesn't sleep and you're constantly changing your surroundings so there is no, like, stability or routine, is some people's brains have trouble with that, right? And then they are not functioning at their highest capacity. You know, they're just not functioning the way that, in a healthy way. And I could feel myself kind of spiraling out of control if I didn't take the time that I needed. But they didn't give me the time that I needed. They sent me, there's like these rock docs in like the industry, and they'll send their artists to them when artists are complaining about like voice fatigue, or, you know, they're crying, or they're, you know, for all other, you know, lack of a better term, acting crazy. And that rock doc, he gave me like, I don't know, like so many different drugs. Like,
my God.
Like so many different drugs. I think I was on Valium. He said I was bipolar. I'm not bipolar. Put me on like some sort of bipolar medication, and then gave me steroids, and then gave me a sleeping pills. And they just put me back on the road. And then
My God.
I, you know, something unfortunate happened with a man on the road that took advantage of me when I was on all those drugs. And I told them about it, and they were like, well, what did you do? You must have done something. And that was the moment I think I realized that, you know, being an artist, a young female artist that's signed and being a part of someone else's agenda isn't really for me. If I'm going to be in music, I have to be in charge. And so that's why, you know, I have my own company, and I try to like nurture other female artists. A lot of other, you know, female musicians know that they can come to me with anything that's happened to them, and, you know, I'll be their advocate. But it's like, I think the time of white men shutting anybody up, any marginalized person, females up, I think it's over.
God, I hope so. I hope you're right.
I think it's time for it to be over. And, you know, I think at that time, it was a different time in music. So there wasn't really a place for me to to have a voice in that way. You know, if I shared that story, I think at that time, and I did share it in a few circles, it was not, it was just kind of frowned upon, you know? It was kind of like, well, you probably did do something, you know, and like you ruined your shot at being in music. And after that, everything kind of slowly started to, you know, fall apart with my management. And I ended up leaving them because they were like, we don't really see you as like an artist, a pop artist. So I was like, okay.
Jeez. I mean,
I was like, okay, bye then.
Yeah, bye then. I mean, to me, like the disposability of an artist, both emotionally and physically, is what I'm getting from that story. And it's just appalling.
It's sad. You know, it's, I think that, you know, this business, it's a business. And as somebody that understands business, and I, listen, I'm a Capricorn, so where my heart should be, there's like a wad of cash. But, so I understand, but, I think that there's a way to do, to monetize, music, monetize artists, monetize brands, without being a soulless fucking emotional vampire. And I think that we could all do better.
I agree. I mean, I was interning at a record company. I won't say where and who the artist was, cause I don't want to, you know, name names, but it was a really famous artist, and he had a heart attack, and he was in the hospital, and he eventually recovered and he was fine. But at the time, no one knew what was going to happen. And I asked one of the executives about it. I said, oh, that's terrible news. He said, I don't care. His record's already out. Right. So we're like, we got the record out of him. So who cares about what happens to him now? At least and I thought, wow, what a thing to say. You know, again, disposability of the artists and, you know, that's just, to me, that is just absolutely inhumane.
It's inhumane. And here's the thing. It's actually not what's best for the artist brand. I mean, if you think about it, like, you should be like, look at healthcare, right? Like, we should be in healthcare for prevention, not, you know, and like, and that's what we should be doing with artists. It's like making sure that they're like, have enough like mental health support, making sure that they can, you know, take care of their bodies, because that is so, so much a part of what we do. I mean, then you look at people and you say, look, they're driven to exhaustion. Now they're like at a hospital, right? Like you see it with our big stars all of the time. And first off, it's like, give them a round of applause because they've been through a fucking marathon and they've been killing it. And like, it was only a matter of time before they had to say, okay, stop. I need to stop, right? Like, because people will keep taking from you because they need you to survive and live. And like, it's got to be a team effort. We all have to kind of lift each other up. And I think that that is what will create a long career, a long healthy career. And, you know, I understand like the consumer wants, but you know, you got to set up boundaries. You just have to. I don't come from the mentality that artists like need to give everybody all of themselves. I think that that is just too tall of an order to ask anybody.
I agree. And I think, you know, in the old days where you'd have an artist put out, you know, 15 to 20 albums because they were working at a pace that was not as crazy or frenetic. You can always tell. You can know, even I think with actors who move away from Hollywood and, you know, like Harrison Ford doesn't live anywhere near Hollywood, and he's had a really long, successful career, I think, because of it. But sometimes when you stay in the eye of the storm, you're afraid that if you leave and, you know, take yourself out of it, that you're out of it. And I think that people have an anxiety about, you know, stepping away from it geographically might, you know, make them feel like they're stepping away from it in totality, which they're not.
Yeah, I think you have to serve what feels right for you. And I think I've always been very in tune with how I feel. So I've definitely leaned into that power. And, you know, and I was just so sick of everyone also telling me like, you have to pick one thing. Are you a songwriter? Or are you an artist? Are you a vocalist? I'm like, fuck all your faces. I'm going to do whatever the fuck I want to do. And, I was like, if that doesn't exist yet, I'll create it. And so I've created my life because everything else that was being sold to me didn't make sense for me. And I think that if you listen, everything takes work. It's hard work. And it's not like I just do nothing. Like, I have to work every day. But that was my choice. And it feels so much better to be authentic and then be able to surround myself with such wonderful, creative people that are decent, you know, and really want to make the world a better place, as cheesy as that sounds, and just make the music industry a better place. Because, you know, in some ways, we're just so behind in so many ways, the way that we treat each other and the way that we operate businesses. It's just a little bit archaic.
Yes, I agree. And so what you've done is you've built your own ecosystem, which is self-sustaining.
Yeah, I always tell everyone in the music industry that, or that's new to it, and they want my advice. I'm like, listen, it's the Wild West out here. Like, there is no industry standard. It's what you negotiate. So, like, you need to get, like, right with yourself and figure out, like, what it is works for you, or else they'll eat you up alive.
Right. Did you feel you had a good support system when you were done with Geffen and when you were done with the major label life? Were your parents supportive? Did you have good friends? Did you always feel supported?
No. I think I had a very unhealthy relationship with my family. I'm adopted, and so my relationship with my parents is complicated. I think that in a weird way, after the Geffen record, it was like the beginning of extreme change that would ultimately make my life what it is now and for the better. And I'd ultimately become the woman that I'm becoming. But I felt very lost. I felt like a lot of artists, we are tied up with our identity as artists. And I think in my head, I felt like if I wasn't signed, then I was like floating and I was nothing, you know? So I had my friends, but like, I was still young, and you have to understand that I was on the road and doing it. I was pretty much working from 16 to 23, 22 straight. So I didn't really have a lot of time to make a lot of friends, and I wasn't the kind of artist that was on tour and like partying. Cause I was working, you know? So I was too young. I couldn't go out and drink at the time. So I was very isolated. And so I think that I had some of my party years when I left Geffen, because I was finally like, oh, this is what people my age are doing, or this is what they were doing, and now I'm catching up. And you know, it was
right.
Just, and I eventually I had a, you know, extreme falling out with my family, and all these other terrible, crazy things happened that were very traumatic, and I was in a very dark place. And I think that when I moved to California, which is about six years ago, that's when I started like truly living my life and creating a support system that I still have today.
I mean, you really went through it. You've been through so much.
Yeah. I mean, I sometimes, you know, I was laughing about this with my friend, who's funny enough, her name is Jessie, and she has the same birthday as me, which is like nuts. But she's an actress, and she's been she was a child actress for, you know, since she was a kid. And we were talking, and I was like, yeah, sometimes it's like scary for me to like talk about all the things that have happened to me, because it sounds like they're lies, because no, not all the stuff can happen to one person. And like, you know, it's like, oh, I'm adopted. Oh, my like face disintegrated and I had to get reconstructive surgery. Then I got signed to a major label. Then like some like shady shenanigans went down, left that. And then, you know, had like crazy falling out with my family. I had it all, like I got, when I moved to California, I mean, I one thing that a lot of my fans don't know about me is that I became like a certified counselor advocate for sexual assault survivors and domestic violence survivors here in California, for Peace Over Violence. And I did that because I had been so it was after The Voice, and I was kind of feeling a little lost again, kind of like how I was feeling a little lost after the Geffen thing, because I was like, okay, well, what now? Am I going to continue to write for other people? Like, I'm not sure music is even healthy for me. I'm not having a good time. I don't have any support. I don't have a manager, you know. I was in a studio one day, and I was taking I got into a cab to go to the train station, and the cab driver did not take me to the train station. He took me out of the city, and I was assaulted. And, you know, that was kind of like a life-changing thing for me. It was very, clearly very traumatic. I had to escape the car afterwards and run to a rest stop, and the state troopers were involved. And I think it was me at my crossroads where I was kind of like, do I stay in this extremely dysfunctional place? And do I continue to be this artist because it's what I've always done? And do I stay with a family that is a little, is toxic for me? Or do I get really uncomfortable again and remove myself from these kind of extreme conditions and really like dig in and do some work on myself and like really start to process all the life that I've basically have had that I've never had the opportunity or the time to really, you know, go through it. And so I did that. And then I think because I did that, I'm in the position that I'm in now. And so I'm not grateful for that assault, but I am grateful for what the result was.
But what's remarkable to me is that you had those options that you just laid out, but there was never the option for you of, or should I crawl under this rock and vanish forever?
Yeah. I mean, I definitely thought about it, but I think that my spirit, as much as I like can't stand myself sometimes, I like can be a little obnoxious. I've always been a survivor and I've always been a fighter, and there's something inside of me that just wants to keep going and prove people wrong and prove myself wrong. And at the end of the day, you have to be there for yourself. And that's such a hard lesson to learn, that you really do have to love yourself. And that's deeply challenging and comes with all those, you know, without sounding so self-helpy. I mean, it's a daily struggle, right? But, you know, if you can be there for yourself, you can let other people be there for you. And that only like lends itself into other things that you do in your life. And that's with business too. And so I think when everything kind of fell apart for me, in an extreme way, and at that point I didn't have a family, I didn't have money, I didn't have a home.
My God.
And I was living in my car. I just started to tour. And then I came out to California, you know, with like $1,000 or something. After also having like an extreme record deal with like lots of money, you know? So I lived these kind of polar opposite lives. And I think that when I had nothing, that's when I felt really alive, right? Because you have something, right? The only thing that you have is yourself. So you better lean into it. You better do the work. You have to have hope. You have to love yourself if you want to survive that, or else you are going to just wither away. And now when I live in the house, I have my husband, and it's so great is that sorry, I lost my train of thought because my husband just walked into the bedroom.
as you mentioned him, he walked right in.
Yeah, he was like, way to go. you know, now when things fall apart, you have to remember that when things fell apart, you still made it okay, right? Like, your feet are like firmly on the ground, and like, you got through it because you had to get through it. And this, whatever low moment you're in now, was not the lowest moment you experienced, and you survived that. So I think it's a good lesson. And I think that I encourage, you know, other people when they're going through all this terrible shit, it fucking sucks, but like, it's going to make the rest of your life so much easier because you're going to be like, oh, I did that. This is fine. Right. This is a minor inconvenience.
Well, you know what's funny about what – I mean, there's nothing funny about what you're saying. But what's funny is that you were saying people think that, you know, it almost sounds like a series of lies. And I think it's because you're only 31. If you were telling that story and you're like, as a 78-year-old person, you know, because it's like a lifetime of stuff that you've already lived and already made it through.
Yeah, sometimes. But you know what? I think that means like maybe the next 30 years are going to be like a little bit more relaxed.
Yeah. They better be. Yeah, they will. I mean, it's also, you know, all kidding aside, it's also incredibly motivating, and it's incredibly comforting to hear you say all these things you've been through and to be talking to you now. In such a good place with these great new songs and this and the new moniker and this. It's just, I think for people who are, because a lot of people listening to the show are young and they're aspiring to be an artist of some kind. And I think this is an incredibly encouraging and motivating and comforting series of stories for them to hear.
Aw, thank you so much. That means a lot.
Well, I appreciate you sharing them. Tell me a little bit about the new music and the new moniker, and I wonder how you feel recording under that moniker. Does that feel much more natural to you and a more of a progression?
Yeah, you know, I never really record under my actual name. I don't know why. I just don't. I think because my name belongs to me, and I think that like I've always liked band names and different monikers because they can come and go, right? But I'm forever kind of thing. So right. I, like, if I ever record an album under my name, it's got to be something like so special. and like something I'd like freak out and be a perfectionist about. But Laces just like really reminds me of how everything gets tied together. And I felt like Charlotte sometimes didn't belong to me anymore, especially after everything that had happened. It just felt like kind of dirty to me, like it was tainted, you know. And I'm not saying that it is. I still like love that music, and I appreciate everyone who enjoys that music. It just felt like that was the young woman in me, and she doesn't live here anymore, you know. So yeah. So I Laces to me is kind of like is Charlotte sometimes evolution. I have different projects, but I feel like Laces isn't that far away from what is Charlotte sometimes record and songs would sound like now. Because I'm still kind of writing from that same place. The new music is just, I would say when I first did my first Laces EP, I really wanted to kind of like step away from Charlotte sometimes. So we did like a very different direction. I also was like trying to work with like the budget I had, and you know, it was kind of like I did my best with what I had.
Right.
And then I released a few other singles with a longtime collaborator, and they were very poppy, and I loved them. But I think that the last two singles, Some Days Not Tonight and Moved, just make more sense for me as an artist. I think they're also really honest. I think Some Days Not Tonight is a really honest discussion that I was having with myself about my anxiety and that being okay with not being okay and saying, hey, you know, someday is not tonight. Like, I'll get there, but right now I feel pretty bad. You know what I mean? And like, and just like kind of living in that, which is something I think I live with a lot of anxiety. And so I'm constantly having those conversations. And then my new song, Moved, it was just such a special experience. You know, I just wrote that like maybe 2 months ago, so it's not very old. I recorded it and, you know, released it all within 2 months. And I was writing with my friend G, which his name is Garin. I can never say it, so I just say G because I don't want to be offensive to him. I'm like, I'm sorry, I can't say it. Because I want to call him Garin, and he's like, it's not Garin. And I'm like, okay. So he and I were working together, and we were working on a song for TV. And we were writing to this, you know, I was like, oh, I want to do a song in this style, and it has like these kind of moments. And we were writing it, and what happened is that, you know, it turned into this very different song. And, you know, I'm quite the stoner, so G and I were super blazed. And we were like writing this song, and we were just kind of talking about, you know, I was thinking about like CW shows, you know, and like how it feels when you are unhealthily in love with somebody that is so toxic and bad for you, but like they make you feel so alive. And, you know, I was trying to think about who's made me feel that way. And, when I was engaged before, like when I was younger, I actually wrote the song, How I Could Just Kill a Man, about this guy. yeah, seems to be quite the muse for me. but I, which he and I are friendly, and we laugh about all the time. He's like, when are you going to stop writing songs about me? I'm like, never. I'm always going to write songs about you. and which is, I'm lucky that my husband is so understanding.
Totally.
But, yeah. I was like, oh, you know, I felt this way about Anthony, how I just felt like everything he did made me feel like alive. And it was like the idea that's like, no one's going to move me like you. It's like, because when you are with somebody and they have that power over you, right? Like there's something unhealthy and kind of like a drug about that, right? Like there's like this really, it's like cathartic, but then it's painful, and then it's beautiful, and then it's safe, and then it's unsafe. And so you're feeling like a roller coaster of emotions. And that's never going to like make you feel more alive, right? Like when you're in a healthy, normal relationship, you're like, yo, what's up? Like, love you. Like, good night. Like, you know, it's just like, you know, because it's an everyday thing. And ultimately that's healthier for you. But that kind of extreme love, you're never going to be moved in that way again, unless you are going to basically sacrifice yourself and your health. So I just thought it would be a really interesting song to write. And I didn't think that I would like be able to go back into that place and feel so connected to it. And it's a really interesting song to write. And it's a really, I really love singing it because it's a very challenging song to sing. You know, it goes really low. It's very, very airy. And then at the end, it kind of does this thing. And, you know, the demo, the actual song, those are my one take demo vocals. So it's hard to recreate that because I was a little high and I was just kind of making it up as I was going along. I was on the couch and I was holding the microphone, and those nuances there, you know, and those mistakes that I've made on the song, you know, it was hard, painful for me to listen to. I was like, oh, I didn't hit that note the right way. And, you know, my husband was like, no, but that's what makes it special. So you're not singing it again. And I'm like, I'm not. Are you sure? So it was really cool. And my long-term piano player, Patrick Firth, we sent him the track, and he redid the piano, and just, he is such an artist. And I just love the way he plays. And Joshua Sadler Brown produced the song, and my husband executive produced the song. And it was just a really special way that everything, you know, came about. When we finally, you know, recorded the song, I just said, I think I need to share this it just feels like one of those songs that we need to release right away. And so we just made it happen.
I love the speed of it. I love how, you know, it's only 2 months old and you've shared it with people so quickly. I love that.
Yeah, I think that's like kind of the cool things about our industry now, you know, like, and I don't have a lot of red tape to go through. Like if I want to release something, I'm going to, and you know, I release a lot of different like side projects and different EPs. But now like when it comes to Lace's songs, like, you know, I have another two singles that are going to be coming out. One is Running in Reverse, a song that I did with Chris Ayer that I'm featured on. We've actually flipped it around and now it's me featuring Chris Ayer. So I'm doing my version of the song featuring him. And that is something I'm really excited to share. And then I'm going to do one other single that I wrote actually way before I wrote Moved, but it's just taken some more time to kind of like figure out production wise where that goes. But that song is called Day in the Dark. And it's kind of about when I had a concussion last summer when I got, someone like rear-ended me on the 101, such an LA story. So like, oh, so you got in a car crash on the 101? No shit. But I had a concussion and I came up with this idea while I was in my concussion. I was like, it feels like a day in the dark, you know, because you're not like in control of yourself all the time because you're going through a concussion. So you get confused a lot. And then I kind of try to massage that idea into what it feels like to be in an extreme place, but then being able to say to yourself, like, it's just another day in the dark. You're going to be fine.
Do you feel more creatively alive than ever?
Yeah, totally. Because it's on my terms and I get to work with all my favorite people. It's so much fun.
And you're calling the shots. I love that. Can you, I think it's important to say this. If someone has gone through something and they don't know what to do about it, because you were talking about, you know, being a counselor, what should they do? I mean, even if it happened a year ago, what advice would you give someone who has been through something they were too ashamed or embarrassed to talk about?
Well, if it has to do with, you know, sexual assault or domestic violence, like, I definitely recommend calling the hotline. There's a few different hotlines, but, you know, it's definitely helpful, and they can give you resources to get the help that you need. I have the number, so it's 1-800-656-4673. And so you can call that if you're ever in, you know, in a situation and get the help that you need, whether it's something that you want to get, you want to go to the hospital, do you want to get a rape kit or anything like that. But even if you just want somebody to talk to and you want to figure out, you know, if you're having a lot of anxiety or having PTSD, they're there for you to talk to. And make sure that you can find the tools that you need in order to survive your day. Or give you access to different, you know, free therapy and things like that, to groups and everything like that. And so I definitely recommend the hotline. And ultimately, make sure that you are carving out some space for self-care. Like, go take a walk, take some deep breaths, remind yourself that your feet are on the ground, that you're in control of your body. Try to, like, you know, really get in tune with your body, because that's been taken from you. And then if it's not sexual assault, it's just, you know, something were put into a position in music where you felt like you were in charge of your own self, you know, your own body, your own work, your own career. Just remember that there's a whole network of amazing people here in the industry that are here for you, and don't be afraid to speak up. Maybe it's not the right thing to go speak up to that person that has made you feel uncomfortable, but reach out to your peers, other, you know, female musicians, other like male allies in music, and they will be there for you. And believe me, I'm sure it's not the first time that they've heard something like that about someone. The only way things are going to get better is if we all communicate with each other. There's also a community called Reboot that Pulse Music Publishing has, and we do monthly monthly get-togethers of just women supporting other women in music, whether that is help monetizing things or mental health or sexual assault or just trying to, you know, create more opportunities for women. That is also a great resource, and you can find them online.
Fantastic. Thank you for that. Okay. And thank you for talking to me. I've wanted to chat with you for a long time. I was really excited to have this conversation, and I appreciate you being so generous with your time.
Oh, of course. Any time. I clearly love to talk.
How's the voice now? I think by the end of the interview, I wanted to be like, anyway, that now I'm totally right. relaxed.
Right. Like now I'm like so awake, right? I'm like, hi, everything's great.
I've enjoyed this so much, and I hope you have a great weekend. I love the music, and let's do it again.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it, and thank you so much for taking the time.
Well, what can I say? I'm crazy about Laces, and you will be too once you learn all about her. Go to headbitchmusic.com and check out all the cool things that she does. There's a lot of it. As for me, well, I only do one thing. I talk to people that are cooler than me. For all details, please go to alexgreenonline.com. Or follow me on Twitter at EmbersEditor, or follow me on Instagram, EmbersPodcast. You can also email me, editor@stereoembersmagazine.com, or, well, no, I guess that's it. I mean, how many more places do you need to find me? Oh, you can find me anywhere that you get your podcasts. Spotify, Stitcher, Last.fm, Google Play, iTunes, if that's still around. Subscribe, leave a comment, leave some stars. Thank you in advance for your generosity and your enthusiasm for the program, assuming you do have all that, which I think you do, because you're here. Let's close the program with another song from Laces. This is Moved. Enjoy it, and I will see you next time for another episode of Stereo Embers, the podcast, only right here on Bombshell Radio.
There's a darkness inside of me. And like magnets, we're only drawn to leave. So we keep circling, circling down, crashing and burning it down. Losing to gravity now, giving to following no. 'Cause nobody moves me. Tell me the truth, make it a good lie. Take me away into the midnight. Hurt me, hurts until it feels right. Nobody, 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 nobody. Gonna move me like you. Gonna move me like you. When I thought I can't move. There's a solid. When you come for me, make the pieces fit like it's meant to be. So we keep circling, circling down, crashing and burning it down. Earthquake now. inside of me. Gonna move me like it's when I thought I can't be.